The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How you doing?
I'm good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. So, describe what went down there in addition to the Kenny Albert play-by-play.
Well, the TSN turning point, and I say that with a lot of respect and pride for my old employer, was in the second period when J.F. Berube came up with a huge save when it was 3-1 St. Louis on Ivan Barbashev. If Barbashev scores there to make it 4-1, it's over. But what happens off of that sequence is Berube makes a save, and then Chicago scores a shorthanded goal. Blake Hillman, a kid out of University of Denver, who plays for Jimmy Montgomery, who just signed with the team, gets his first NHL goal. It's 3-2, and Chicago never looks back. And then, unfortunately for Chris Butler, that was his 392nd NHL game. Chris Butler, a kid from St. Louis, Missouri, takes a penalty in the last 2 minutes of the game. And it's a tough play, so it's a tough situation for him to be in. And he takes a penalty, and then Duncan Keith gets his second goal of the year to win the game for Chicago. It was surreal. It really was surreal to witness it.
That's even more surprising than the way they lost. Duncan Keith, his second of the year?
Yeah. Yeah, second of the year. And, you know, I got to tell you this. I had a long talk with Dunk after the game, and known him a long time. In the old days, remember when I used to go out west and run practices for the junior teams, Mitch?
Yeah, sure do.
And Duncan was in Kelowna, and at that time he was a kid that just transferred, left Michigan State to go play for Kelowna Rockets. And I remember telling Mark Habscheid, who was the coach of Kelowna Rockets at the time, this guy's got serious NHL potential, serious. And eventually he did make it. And Dunk and I have always been friends since then. So that's 2002. And we were talking. He says, you know what, this will be the first summer since probably 2009 where I could go home, I could rest, I can rehabilitate, and I can get ready properly for the next year. That's what he told me last night after the game.
Yeah, I think that the core guys are all probably feeling the same way. As you pointed out yesterday, before we get to the Habs, here was a part of the conversation I had ahead of the game tomorrow between Chicago and St. Louis with Pierre. Do you sense something dramatic going down in Chicago in the offseason?
Everybody's saying that, so my mind is probably poisoned because I hear everybody saying that. But I know the people in Chicago pretty well. I haven't heard that from them. You got to remember what Joel Quenneville's contract is. It's gigantic. It's not a little bit big. It's very big. I could see some fine tuning done with their group. I could see some fine tuning maybe being done on the coaching staff. I could see potentially some fine tuning being done at the management level. I can't see Stan Bowman being replaced. I'd be shocked if Joel were.
And today, John McDonough, the president of the Blackhawks, announced that both Quenneville and Bowman will be returning to continue to do what they've been doing.
As they should be, by the way. It's the old saying, if you want to replace the coach, who do you have that's going to be better than him to replace him? And if you want to replace the manager, who do you have that's going to have a better track record than the manager that you have to replace him? And the answer is nobody. Not since the salary cap came into play in 2005. There hasn't been a better tandem than Quenneville and Bowman. There has not been. Do they need to fine-tune some of their staff? Absolutely. Do I think they will do that? I do. I truly believe that. But I can tell you know what? I'm so grateful. I had a long chat with Joel last night before the game. Kevin Dineen was there as well. Alfie Samuelson, one of my old players. It was a walk down memory lane. And I thanked Joel, and I had a long text exchange with him today, and thanked him for all the great things that he had done for us at the NHL and NBC. In terms of enhancing our broadcast and allowing me to interview him during games and how forthright he was during a lot of those interviews, especially in pressure-packed moments in huge Stanley Cup games. So, you know, he should be really proud of what he's done there. He gets a chance to continue and help the rebuild. Their best players need to rest, and they will get that rest this summer, as Duncan Keith told me last night. So I'm really happy by that announcement. I'm not surprised by it, because I do have a little bit more inside knowledge than maybe some other people. But I'm happy that has actually gone public today. I think that's really appropriate.
In Detroit earlier today, here's an interesting exchange between Claude Julien, Arpin Basu, and Pat Hickey.
You got off to such a difficult start. You had a really busy slate of exhibition games. Do you think that played any part in your start to the season this year?
No, I don't want to use that as an excuse. There's no doubt.
Just say to look at maybe doing it differently.
Don't use an excuse, was it a problem?
Yeah, but I'm going to explain that if you guys let me. Okay. So I don't want to use that as an excuse. But at the same time, there's no doubt that sometimes a different schedule will help you do some different things, and we've already looked into that. So that's my answer to that question.
Well, do you have an influence?
All right, and there's Arpin saying, do you have an influence? I think what Claude said and how he answered that, they've probably expressed their desire to not go through that again, considering they're not an elite team, and it's vital for bubble teams to get off to good starts. There was a lot of grumbling about the lack of practice time in the exhibition season.
Yeah, no, everything you just said is accurate. It's 100% right. We talked about it this past fall. Whoever put that plan in place needs to be looked at by upper management. That should never happen again. We talked about that. That was silly. Scheduling is not something that you can easily control during the regular season, but it is during the preseason. Back when I did it, a lot of it was cash grabbing. With Pittsburgh in particular, we would get paid serious amounts of money to go to Texas where they didn't have a team, or go to California where they only had one team, and we would play in Sacramento, and we would play in Daly City before the Sharks got there, or we'd go to Houston, or we'd go to Dallas, and we would play, and we'd get paid substantial amounts of money, but we had to play certain players in our lineup, and that's why we would use either Denver or Vail as a home base and work out of there. But that's a long time ago. But that you can control your preseason schedule. You really can't control your regular season schedule, except if you have some minor complaints, you can try to adjust those. That's the one thing you can do, because you can get it early enough. But you can control your preseason schedule.
So the Canadiens played 8 exhibition games in September. A couple teams played 9, a handful played 6, most were 7-8. That conversation should happen early, right, Pierre? And if the coach feels as strongly as he does, as he spoke to that today, you'd think he would communicate that to Jeff Molson and they'd get it straightened out.
I've told you guys this a million times. If you want to run a team properly, you have to have a long-term plan. You have to have a medium-range plan, so a 5-year plan, 4-year plan, 2-year plan, 1-year plan, 6-week plan, 2-week plan. You got to have a plan for everything. And if you don't have long-term planning and you don't understand the value of that, then you're not going to be successful as a group. I don't know whether they've documented a long-term plan or not. You know, I know the same management team's been there for 6 years, so I don't know what they've done or haven't done. But I know that if you're going to run an organization, you need to understand the importance of long-term vision and planning. And exhibition scheduling is part of that.
Well, I think like anybody else, you know, I think you're allowed to be frustrated, because nobody likes to lose, and I'm no different than anybody else. I'm not used to losing. I don't like to lose. And so there's parts of that's frustrating, like everybody else, you know. But at the same time, I have to be objective and look at the situation. And there was some challenges along the way that we didn't expect, the number of injuries. We talked about concussions yesterday, and then players having to move up in the lineup in areas where they weren't quite ready for it.
Nikita Sherbak, the latest. They've had 6 concussions in the last several months. On Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. So you mentioned 5-year plan, and I think most organizations, right, when somebody moves in and you start to, whether it's rebuild or retool, I think it's a fair assessment. 5 years, it's a pretty large window. How do you explain what hasn't happened in Buffalo? There's fairly new people, but it did start under a new management regime. Why they are still, for the third time in 5 years, at the basement?
Well, this group has had no time at all. They've had one draft. Jason Bottrell and Randy Sexton have had one draft. So they deserve some time. They inherited a very difficult situation. They've implemented a new coach and a new ideology. They're trying to go a little bit like New Jersey, a little bit like Pittsburgh. It'll take some time. They're trying to surround Jack Eichel. They're trying to surround Rasmus Ristolainen, and they clearly need goaltending help. They clearly need depth on defense. Sammy Reinhart starting to progress, which is really positive for them. He's got over 22 goals, I think 23 or 24, if I remember correctly. So they've got some good things going on internally. Their American Hockey League team in Rochester is starting to make significant progress by adding character players. They're happy about that. But I can't speak to what happened there before. I can only talk to you about what they're trying to do now. And the management team there, I know them very well, and I think they've got a lot of really good ideas.
It's just another warning, and I know the temptation, and a lot of fans, and I know Tony has been on this for a while, just strip it down and start all over again. It's very easy to say that and think you'll get it right, but all these years later, look where the Oilers are and look where the Sabres are.
Well, I wouldn't.
What?
I would just say this. You can. I really admire what the. How about if I do it in a positive way?
Sure.
I really admire what the New York Rangers are doing. I really admire what the Boston Bruins did. I really admire what the Philadelphia Flyers have done. And I love, more than anything, what the New York Rangers have decided to do. Because they've evaluated and they've seen what the competition is doing and they've seen what the competition is obviously doing well, and they don't want to take a step back. So the Devils, when Ray Shero went there, I can tell you because he sat 2 feet from me when he was going over all this stuff with John Hines, so I witnessed it. And it was about how are we going to change the format of our group. It's going to be about pace. It's going to be about skill. We're going to have dynamic, young offensive players. We're not going to be the dead puck Devils, which they were for a long time. And so they went in there with a format and an ideology and the types of players they were going to draft. And that was the mandate for their scouts. So if you look at it, no team had more players at the World Junior this year. This is only after 2 drafts. No team had more players at the World Junior than the New Jersey Devils. They had 7. But their philosophy was all predicated on we're going to get faster, we're going to get younger, and we're going to get really skillful. And we're going to be attack-oriented. So they've done that. The Boston Bruins, Donnie Sweeney, it wasn't easy for him. I can go check the newspaper reports when he made some of these trades, trading Milan Lucic out of there and doing the things that he did. The fans ripped him apart, and the media really ripped him apart. But he had a vision. He had a vision. And he went out, and he got guys, college players mostly, and he made some really slick drafts. And he built an ideology with the Bruins, and the Bruins have their way back.
Yep.
And it's what I've been telling you forever. The Canadians need to establish the Montreal Canadian way. And they haven't done it because it's been a mismatch. It's been, we're going to go big 1 year, we're going to go fast the next year, we're going to go this way another year. It hasn't worked. It comes down to how strong is your vision for your team. And you can't deviate from it. And if you do, you're going to be in trouble.
Just pure, you know, it's Red Wings and Canadians tonight, and a lot of Canadian fans will say, you know, I like some of the younger players on the Habs. They'll tell you they like Drouin, they like Galchenyuk, they like Lehkonen. And then I'll look at Detroit, I'll be like, okay, that's fine, but in the division, Detroit's not very good this year, and I like Larkin, I like Mantha, I like Athanasiou. Just with the young players up front, how would you compare these two teams?
It's hard to compare. They're really different. Larkin is, you know, unbelievably quick. Athanasiou is unbelievably quick. Mantha's got an amazing release. I think he could be a dynamic power forward in the game. He just has to get harder on the puck, which I think he'll eventually do. You know, Drouin is what he is.
Isn't it similar, Pierre? I'm sorry to jump in, but I was just thinking of the names that Mitch threw out, as you are. Isn't it similar in the respect that as good as they all appear to be at a still a relatively young part of their career, that you're not going to look at any of them to say carry this team?
No, I don't think so. I think Dylan Larkin's got the chance because he's not only a scorer and a skater, but he can be a playmaker. He's proven that this year. He hasn't scored the way they wanted him to, but he's made fantastic plays. So I think he's the one guy that can elevate maybe above all those other players. But I'll stick with this, and maybe I don't endear myself to Canadiens ownership or management. Until you make a decision on Galchenyuk as a centerman, I think you're spinning your wheels. I do. Well, I really, truly do.
Well, we thought they had, and then Galchenyuk spoke to Arpin Basu and said he would have liked to. Like a lot of us, considering the state of the team and how deep into the depth chart that they had to go with Paul Byron and Charles Hudon getting shots at center and Logan Shaw and people like that, that they didn't even ask him to go back there this year. But he didn't sound angry. He didn't sound upset. No. He wasn't complaining. He was simply answering a question honestly that he would have liked a longer look at center.
Well, all I can tell you is he was drafted as a centerman. He was drafted as a big, dominant center iceman coming off of, you know, a haphazard couple years because of injury at the major junior level, but obviously his skill level couldn't be denied. When he played in the World Junior that won a gold medal in 2013 in Ufa in Russia, he started the tournament playing with Johnny Goodrill and Jimmy Vesey. That was the top line. And then the Americans, Phil Housley was the coach, decided, I think JT Miller can help us better at center than he can, and they moved him down. I think he moved to the third or fourth line, and JT Miller replaced Galchenyuk on the top line, and they eventually won gold. Johnny Gibson was a goalie, and Seth Jones was a top defenseman with Jake McCabe. But listen, he's a centerman. We're beating our head against the wall here. Clearly, internally, they think that he's not. So let them keep thinking that. But they took him third overall. Mitch Nomek, you didn't take him third overall. I didn't take him third overall. They took him third overall.
So today, I think we go back to Pat Hickey and Arpin and a couple of other people who are surrounding Claude Julien on Jonathan Drouin.
So you still see him as a center?
Well, whether he's center or wing, you know, like, guys, at the end of the day, I see him as a good player. And depending on what I have, the good part is I know he can play both. That's the bottom line.
That's deja vu all over again. Depending on what I have.
Well, so what's he saying, that they're getting Tavares or they're trying to get Tavares? Obviously, everybody knows that. You don't know. He doesn't know what he's going to get. So nobody knows. So they're going to have to battle through this. I still think, again, you're putting a lot of pressure, and it's not unfair to the media. The media guys aren't asking him anything wrong, and they're not doing it in a malicious way. But I think it's a really tough spot for the coach to be in. I think that's a really tough spot for the coach to be in because he's really not involved with player personnel decisions. There are very few, I can tell you this honestly, there are very few coaches in the league that are in charge of player personnel procurement. There are very few.
For sure, but he had, as the head coach and a respected veteran head coach, he had the opportunity himself to move Galchenyuk to the middle of the ice.
And he decided not to
because, based on what he said it flat out. Mitch, after the game, right, there was a game where somebody got hurt and Galchenyuk had a couple of shifts at center and looked good.
Yeah, but he said in a joking way, he's like, he looked pretty good tonight at center, but I still see him as a winger.
Yeah.
Well, again, they're for whatever reason, I think the pool's been poisoned on this player in terms of playing center, and now it's almost like we're going to show you he's a winger. So go ahead, do it.
All right, here, because it's Detroit, I wanted to ask you about a story. I got upset reading it. There's nothing anybody can do about it, but it's still upsetting nonetheless. And Manny in Terrebonne actually tweeted me earlier today. I was going to ask you anyway, but I'll read his tweet. Mitch, can you ask Pierre how he feels about the NHL removing the layer on the Stanley Cup that had Gordie Howe's name on it, and the Rocket, by the way, and a few others? It'll be gone. There'll be no Gordie Howe on the Stanley Cup. I guess one day Austin Matthews' name will have to be removed, too.
I'm not aware of this.
Oh, you weren't aware of this? What's that?
I'm not aware of this whole sequence. I apologize.
Well, because of the Stanley Cup, the rings of the cup.
Right. No, I'm aware that they take rings off.
And so now they're about to take the ring containing the teams of the 40s, which featured Howe and the Rocket, among others, and their names are going to be removed from the cup.
Well, I know one thing. Rocket's name will be on there for a while because he won it past the 40s. I wasn't aware of that. So that ring's coming off. Interesting.
Yeah, and there's just
tough. That's the reality of it, I guess.
I mean, you can't. You were lucky enough to. Geez, we saw what happened to Jacques Martin. He almost dropped it. Right, it's getting heavy.
I've seen other guys almost drop it too.
All right, because you can't. You just maybe in a museum it could get bigger in the Hall of Fame, but certainly
yeah,
not.
It's just it's perfect the way it is. 35 pounds in the rings, and yeah,
it's the most beautiful trophy in sports.
It is. It is, and I can tell you this: it's very addicting when you touch it and when you hold it. And I've had the chance to sleep with it twice. It's a highly addictive thing.
Pierre,
very addictive.
You slept with the cup.
I did twice.
Was there anything in the cup when you slept with it?
No.
Really? You
sure?
It was
right next to me.
Did you spoon it?
No. Well, I was turned the other way, but yes.
And you were safe, right?
I was safe and the cup was safe, yes.
So what's the
story? We lost it one night in Tom Barrasso's backyard.
How do you lose it in a backyard?
Everybody forgot it was there.
Oh, you just left it there.
Yeah, but they forgot that it was left there, so everybody was panicked, but we eventually found it. It also took a swan dive, courtesy of Phil Bork, into Mario's pool, and it broke the bottom.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that was not good. If you go look at the 91, actually the 92 Cup Celebration Trophy, it's dented. You can see it. Phil took a swan dive off of the cliff in Mario's backyard.
Children. Champions, but children. Thanks, as always, Pierre. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow about the Sedins' last game tonight in Vancouver. Boston and Philadelphia.
I still can't believe that's over for them. But I understand, and I just love the way they're doing it. And the fans in Vancouver were treated to two amazing guys, and I'm really happy to hear that they're going to make their home there. They're special, special people. They really are.
Have a great night. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Mitch. I appreciate it. Have a great night, everybody.
Boston at Florida tonight, not Philadelphia. Philadelphia is playing host to Carolina.
At the end of the day, I am a Penguin.
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. ShipEnergy.com.
Melnick in the Afternoon, brought to you by Ginsburg Zingra. Struggling to make ends meet with your debts? Get your free consultation with a licensed insolvency